probably needs little introduction as well, because she was here yesterday, and I was out, and I'm going to have to leave for a few moments. I'm sorry that for that, Vicki, but Vicki Griffin is the Health Ministries Director of the Michigan Conference in the United States, and she's going to present about how we can integrate the message we have with science. So we welcome you again, Vicki, and I'll let you put that on.
Good afternoon, everyone. And Dr. Fraser and Dr. DeLange, what inspiring messages. We are challenged. I'm going to start recycling. I've got to do something more for the environment. These were wonderful messages this afternoon. We're not done yet. Today we're going to be talking about SDA health philosophy and modern science. We're taking a look at an integrated approach to health and healing. And this is very important for us because so often we think of the relationship between some of our Adventist philosophies and modern medicine as antagonistic. Today I'm going to present to you a case for a healthy tension rather than antagonistic approach. And it begins with the same illustration that our prior speaker used with the Good Samaritan. When the Good Samaritan helped that poor injured man by the side of the road, he did everything he could personally for him, but then he did more. He took him to an inn, and he told the innkeeper, he said, "Whatever this man needs, do it for him, and when I return, I will pay you." And I believe that the Lord is telling us the same thing. When we work with human beings, with individuals, we're going to see a whole spectrum of need. And he is telling us, make sure that these people get whatever they need, and when I return, I will pay you. The Bible teaches us something that is already becoming very popular, and we have embraced this since our inception, but I don't know that we've always understood the importance of it, and that is the difference between healing and wholeness. When the 10 lepers were healed of their physical ailment, one came back and yielded all and gave all and worshiped, and the Lord told him, "You are made whole." It's a different word. It means salvation. So as we look at wellness, as we look at wholeness, how does an integrated approach to our health care, to our ministry of healing to other people, embrace modern medicine and Adventist philosophy of wellness? Let's just take a look at it together. First of all, as Seventh-day Adventists, we believe in clinical integration. We believe in the mind-body connection in disease and health. We believe in the environment. In other words, not just the external environment that we create around us to facilitate health, but an internal environment of the way that we think. There are environmental factors that contribute to health outcomes. Lifestyle has a profound effect on mental, physical, social, spiritual health and the health of our community. We believe in connections, not only connection with God, but connections with each other that are as important. Positive connections are as important as broccoli in health. As a matter of fact, drunks who have friends live longer than drunks who do not have friends. Managing stress is something that the Bible talks a lot about. How do we manage our emotions? How do we manage our priorities? How do we manage the multiple demands of life, the challenges which will not go away? These things have a very profound effect on our health and on physical outcomes as well as mental health. We're told that true science and inspiration are in perfect harmony. And on that basis, we should find some healthy tension, and indeed some great advantages to embracing science and philosophy. And here is how I believe that we can do this. We believe and teach in integration. We believe that there is a biology of healing. We have some of the most wonderful hospitals and educational programs. Dr. Fraser gave a call for training epidemiologists. Is he here? I don't know if he's here right now. But he gave a call for epidemiologists. But he said they had to be young. If they could be a little older, I think I would sign up. I love epidemiology, but I'm too old to be... Pardon? You can overlook... I ran this morning. Will that make a difference? But we believe in a biology of healing. We believe in sound scientific principles. We appreciate germ theory. We appreciate surgery and x-ray technology and advanced medicine and some of the wonderful innovations that are the result of a scientific method that save lives and prolong lives. We believe in assessment, diagnosis, treatment, and follow-up care. Wrapping this, we have an amazing philosophy of wellness, a paradigm, if you will. And there is nothing more important for us to have solid ground on than on our paradigm. Because if we have a wrong paradigm, a faulty paradigm, and we build on it, it's like a leaning building. It cannot sustain itself. So our philosophy of wellness embraces the biology of healing and the science of rational treatments and intervention. But we also wrap that with a philosophy of wellness where we look beyond lab tests. We look beyond allopathy. We look to the roots of disease. For instance, there are chronic pain syndromes that go beyond any structural or anatomical problem. We understand that there are roots to pain that go beyond an anatomical or structural problem. There are pain-prone personalities. We understand that pain can create its own monster, that the whole system can create memory. So we believe that there are roots that are deeply that go deeply beyond allopathy, that go into our psyche and our belief system, spiritual roots for illness. We believe in rational remedies. We are famous and have been famous for rational treatments that are natural, such as water therapy, hydrotherapy. They are based on sound sciences, poultices, hot and cold treatments, and the wise application and use of various simple herbs. For instance, the water treatments use the system of retrostasis and derivation, where we're stimulating surface immunities and increasing circulation and interferon. We know how to deal with these things, but the remedies that we advocate as Seventh-day Adventists are rational remedies. They are based on sound biology. To give an example of one that is not, it's based on a wrong paradigm, for at least from my perspective, and I would use the example of homeopathy. And it alarms me that we as Seventh-day Adventists have shifted from rational approaches to natural remedies and have gone into some of the systems that are based on mystical concepts. The whole basis of homeopathy is based on a mystical concept that when you dilute and succuse a substance and minimize the actual element that's in the substance to where there's nothing left, you're actually increasing energy. That is not a rational approach. And the reason that the pills all taste the same is because there's nothing in them most of the time. So the danger of overdose is low. We believe in lifestyle links, even in our approach to science and to treatment and to all of the technologies that we utilize. We focus on lifestyle. There are certain things that pills and treatments and surgeries cannot do, and we embrace that. And that is a complement to the acute care and to the palliative care that we offer in the biology of healing. We also believe in lasting change. It is so important for us to remember that we want to build into people's lives the tools for long-lasting change. And that involves more than information. When we present information, we educate people. But we are also called to motivate people and to inspire people. So we combine motivation, education, and inspiration as part of our very deeply rooted philosophy of wellness and wholeness, not just treatment. We know that from the Adventist Health Study, and I'm just afraid to show this slide with Dr. Frazier here, but I got it off the newsletter, so Adventist and longevity, if you want to add 10 years to your life, 5 health behaviors, and the world is embracing these health behaviors. And we have good, sound, scientific basis for this. Adventist and chronic disease, lower colon cancer, with lower wine and red meat consumption. Legumes are protective against cancer. Nut consumption reduces the risk of a heart attack by 50%. Whole grains reduce heart attack by 50%. 5 glasses of water a day reduces heart attack by 50%. Tomato consumption reduces prostate cancer risk by 70%. These are based on rational, systematic studies. We are so grateful for the blending of sound biology and science, the medical professions that we have developed throughout our church history, and our philosophy of wellness. Actually, the healthy tension that the two have protects each one from abuse. We know that more than 100,000 people a year die from doctor-administrated drug overdoses. And so when practitioners go in with a mindset of just allopathy, there's a danger of abuse. On the same token, we know that there are people who embrace a philosophy of wellness as Seventh-day Adventists who have no rational basis for some of the treatments that they are advocating, and they are dangerous to the health of the participants. And so blending a sound rational basis for what we advocate only strengthens our philosophy of wellness. Soy milk consumption, a positive thing. The closer one is to a vegetarian, you lower the risk for many diseases. And there are other health advantages which are still being shown by science to be salutary to mental, physical, and spiritual health. Avoiding spicy foods and caffeine, low refined sugar and saturated fat, regular meal times. What an amazing benefit that is. Regularity in sleep habits. After hearing Dr. Harding's talk yesterday, I wanted to go home and take a nap, not because it was boring, but because it was an amazing collection of good information on the importance of sleep. Avoidance of overwork, positive social ties. The Bible says he sets the solitary in families. There's a reason why. There are enormous health benefits to healthy social ties. Mental stimulation and challenges, rest and recreation, practicing self-control, practicing benevolence. This is one that is an amazing health advantage. And my husband, when he shares, he has some stories about people that have been reclaimed from death just by simply starting to give of themselves, give of their money to others, trusting in God and cultivating and practicing positive attitudes. We're only just beginning to understand the influence, the biology behind the Bible commission to practice positive attitudes. Keeping the Ten Commandments, including the Sabbath. Proverbs says, "Have I not written to you excellent things in counsels and knowledge?" And for what reason? So that I can make you know the certainty of the words of truth. Science is validating biblical principles of living, thinking, and behaving every day, so that you may answer the words of truth to those who send for you. So there's another purpose for us. It's not just our personal advantage. This is part of the way that we exonerate and reveal and glorify God's wonderful character to a world who has been given a false concept of God. Let's take a look, and I put the end of the program first because I know that I'm going to run out of time. So now we will go back and let's look at some of these principles. I'd like to show you from science how the paradigm for wellness is being validated by science. The counsel that we have is that the relationship that exists between the mind and body is how intimate? It is very intimate. When one is affected, the other sympathizes. Yesterday I did a program upstairs called Peptides of Peace. These molecules of communication that form the nexus between the brain and body are called neuropeptides. They're capable of action at a distance. We've been told that the stomach communicates with the brain, that there is this brain Stomach connection. Ellen White talks about how when our stomach is deranged, the brain is deranged. Well, we now understand that 95% of serotonin production is in the GI tract, and that there is a very delicate relationship between the brain and the stomach. The condition of the mind affects the health to a far greater degree than many realize. Many of the diseases from which men suffer are the result of mental depression. A merry heart does good like a medicine, but a broken spirit is a risk factor for osteoporosis. Grief, anxiety, discontent, remorse, guilt, distrust all tend to break down the life forces. What are the life forces? Well, when I think of the life forces, I think of this great homeostatic synchrony, this homeostatic mechanism that occurs between the stress system and the immune system. They're constantly seeking to stay in balance. And when these are broken down, it invites decay and death. And there are numerous studies showing what hypercortisolism does and how that results in depressed immunities. And when your immune system is ramped up, then it causes hypocortisolism. And there are a whole slew of separate diseases that are associated with each of those conditions. Courage, hope, faith, sympathy, and love promote health and prolong life. A contented mind. A cheerful spirit is health to the body and strength to the soul. I would like to show you from the words of Candace Pert. She authored Molecules of Emotion. She is one of the biochemists who discovered the endorphins and enkephalins, the receptor sites for those, with her team back in the 70s. Listen to this. Pockets of peptide juices are released from both glands and brain cells, after which they bind with specific receptors that enable them to act at sites far from where the juice is originated. This is what endocrinologists call action at a distance. That's why when you're frightened, you don't feel it in between your earlobes, you feel it in your stomach. 5% of the brain is electrical, 95% is chemical, and these neuropeptides, they have this rapid transit system between brain and body, but it gets even more interesting. We made a radical discovery that every neuropeptide receptor we could find in the brain, and there are 50 of them, is on the surface of the human monocyte. Immune cells also make, store, and secrete the same neuropeptides themselves. In other words, immune cells are making the same chemicals that we conceive of as controlling mood in the brain. So immune cells not only control the tissue integrity of the body, but they also manufacture information chemicals that regulate mood or emotion. The same it holds true for the GI tract, for the cells lining the respiratory system, and blood vessels. So the way we treat our bodies affects our minds. So when we go out and when we're depressed, instead of sitting down and watching Desperate Housewives and eating moon pies, when we go out and we exercise and eat a healthful diet and practice positive thinking and move our bodies and have healthy digestion because we're not snacking, we're eating well, the body itself produces hormones, or actually peptides of well-being, messengers of well-being that are sent to the rescue up into the brain. When we think the way we are taught to discipline ourselves to think, these messengers of well-being are sent to all of these systems of the body. It's an amazing thing, and the Bible teaches us this integration. We know that the immune system, like the central nervous system, has memory and the capacity to learn. Emotions are at the nexus between matter and mind, going back and forth between the two and influencing both. Animal studies show that even the immune system has a memory. You can inoculate animals with toxins in a highly saccharine-sweetened drink, and then their bodies host an immune response. Then, after several incidents of this, you can you remove the toxin out of the drink and the immune system still mounts the same immune response. So the body has memory. It has become, this is Dr. John Rady from Harvard University, talking about the environment, creating an environment both internally of the way we think and how we arrange our surroundings to remind ourselves of the positive decisions that we are making. It has become obvious He has written a user's guide to the brain. He's also written a wonderful book called Spark about the mental health effects of exercise. It has become obvious that we can actually change our brains by altering the external environment of our surroundings or the internal environment of our bodies. We can take better advantage of our strengths and amend our weaknesses. This is a wonderful thing for us as Seventh-day Adventists to understand, that the brain reshapes itself according to what it learns, that these brains of ours are not like Descartes' error, the housing. They're not the suitcase for the soul, you see. Every year at Rome, there is a huge symposium, a convention for neuroscientists, where they study and take a look at the brain-body connection and the brain-soul connection. But we, because of our system of belief, because of what we understand about what the Bible teaches about that we are souls, we don't have that controversy. We don't have to figure out what this ghost-like thing is doing and what the relationship is with the brain. We understand that the way we treat our brains affects the way we think. And the way we treat our bodies affects our brain. We are in harmony with Scripture and science. I want to challenge a neuroscientist to go to that convention in Rome and win some souls. Let's talk about lifestyle. Andrew McCullough from the UK. We are only just beginning to understand how the brain as an organ is influenced by the nutrients it derives from the foods that we eat and how diet has an impact on mental health. We don't have to be frightened of science, because science validates what we believe, what the Bible teaches. Exercise. I love this. After a bout of aerobic exercise, you are more sensitive to changes in the world around you, better able to make good decisions, and when you need to act, you're quicker off the mark. When we exercise, especially aerobically, it's like throwing Miracle-Gro in your brain. Neurotrophic factors are released, and even peptides from the heart are transferred to the brain, and it increases, it turns on the genes dedicated to learning. So it increases brain plasticity. Now, this is one that Dr. Harding didn't have on his program yesterday, but I don't know how many thousands of dollars was spent for this study to get this information. A wide range of clinical and observational data supports a general picture that inadequate sleep results in tiredness. There it is. Pretty astonishing, isn't it? But it doesn't stop there. Difficulties with focused attention. You heard Dr. Harding yesterday talking about focused attention. And in order to make change, the brain needs to be able to pay attention. And not only that, a low threshold to express negative affect. That funnel gets narrower. You're more irritable, more easily frustrated. But it also has to do with overcoming addictions and bad habits. Difficulty modulating impulses and emotions. We know that cortisol levels are higher in sleep-deprived people. Blood sugar regulation is more difficult. And when cortisol levels are higher in the brain, it actually destroys new nerve cell production. The brain does generate new nerve cells, but high cortisol levels destroy those new nerve cells. Social connections are biblical and scientific. I knew I wouldn't be able to finish. I'll just finish this slide. Healthy social ties are linked to longer life, improved mental function, less sickness, less depression, and more optimism. This is from the American Journal of Critical Care. Spiritual well-being is at the center of a healthy lifestyle. We have perfect integration with our philosophy of wellness, scientific, rational approach to healing, and biblical truth. Thank you.